Good morning, everyone. It is November 9th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom. I am your host, Frank. Welcome again to your home away from homeroom. Beautiful morning here in the Adirondacks. It's harvest season. It's time to be thankful. And I'm thankful for my dog getting over her diarrhea. Man, if you have not seen what happens with a 100-pound, 8-month-old puppy with diarrhea, then you're pretty lucky, actually, because it's not pretty. Good to be past that. Bit of an Indian summer out there yesterday. Boys were out wrestling in the wood chip pile without even any coat on, let alone a winter coat. Thank goodness we never really up at this elevation have to worry about ticks. Haven't seen them yet, and everybody says that they're not out there at this elevation, so just another great thing about life in the mountains, tick free. Now let's talk today about kids, about fertility, even though that's more of a spring thing, I guess, right? You got rabbits and spring flowers, eggs. These are all symbols of fertility for the spring, right? And Easter, of course, the word Easter itself is probably from Istra, which is the pagan Saxon, really, fertility goddess from the German, really. It came over there. So, yeah, of course, a lot of Christian holidays put on top of old pagan holidays as a PR move, a very successful PR move, as it turns out to be. So, fertility. Most of you listening to this podcast probably already know, right, that there is a very well-established trend that as wealth goes up, as per capita GDP goes up, fertility rate goes down. The richer a country it is, the fewer children per woman that country is giving birth to. And we'll go look at the data for that in a second. But first, let's go over the big ideas, right? Two big ideas here. And then I'll give you the data, and then we'll come back to the big ideas and see what the implications are. So think about the big ideas while we go over the data. And here they are, the big ideas. Number one, right? Number one big idea here is if you think about it, because of selection effects, there has to be some force, perhaps not the prevailing force, but some force that is going to push fertility rates to rebound. Right now, the United Nations is, and most people are predicting the world population to stop growing, to mostly level off, to slow down its growth drastically by about the year 2100. Figure it's going to level off maybe around 11 billion people there. And they're predicting that based on the current drop in fertility rates. But the number one big idea that I want to look at here today is there is an evolutionary selective force at work here that will tend to push toward rebounding fertility rates. It's not guaranteed to win, right? You can have a lot of different forces acting on an object, and the net force could be different than any individual force. So just because this selection pressure is there doesn't mean it will prevail. However, what is, a lot of people don't even acknowledge this selection pressure or force. What is it? Well, think about the mechanism here. As country gets richer, fertility rate drops, and who's having kids at that point? Who are the people remaining having kids, having bigger families? Where do most of the kids come from at that point? They come from the parents who really want to be parents, from the parents whose mission in life is to be parents, from the people whose focus is their children. And what drives them to that? Well, could be a lot of different factors, but it is very likely, the argument goes, that that constellation of traits, that assortment of predilections, genetic, can be passed genetically onto the next generation. It's hereditary. And so, in other words, the kids of these people who are choosing to be parents, the next generation will inherit some tendency toward the family, toward having kids themselves. Their parents are the ones who really like kids. So the next generation is also probably going to like to have kids. That's how the argument goes. And as time goes on, as the wealth in a country increases and the people who don't want to have kids stop having kids, they don't need to have kids to help out as labor or to be cannon fodder in some regional army conflict or something like that. People who don't want to have kids don't need to have kids. The kids that are had will be from parents who really want kids, and they'll have this trait of really wanting kids, or not a single trait, but an array of traits that mean that these kids will be more likely to have big families themselves, right? And as time goes on, that will manifest itself as a force that drives humanity back toward having more children, towards having bigger families again. So you see the argument here. Will it happen? Will that force win out over other forces? If it does, how soon would it happen, right? So think about that while we go through the second big idea and the data here, and then we'll come back to that and to the implications of it, right? It's not exactly a new idea, of course. A lot of people thought of it independently. I thought of it independently, been thinking about it for a while, and then years, right? And then I happened to sit down and look at it, and Jason Collins and Lionel Page from Queensland University, of course, published a great, they've been publishing on this topic a couple papers over the last 10 years, and they have a really cool paper from 3 years ago that's sort of the culmination of their work in this area, and it includes a model and some predictions. We'll go over that. See, while we're talking about the data here, you can see if you can match the predictions of their model, or at least predict what they predicted. By the way, they say that they profited from some discussions, and another person who thought about this beginning about a decade ago, of course, was Robin Hanson. Yay, we love Robin Hanson around here, right? So we'll get to that. But there is another big idea out there too, and I don't see, you know, I don't see Collins and Page discussing this, and maybe Hanson addressed it somewhere in one of his blogs. He probably did, but I haven't seen it. And maybe it's, you know, it's a little obvious, so to some extent it might go without saying, but I think it has some pretty important implications. So we're going to visit this as the second of our big ideas. It is, think about it, if this occurs, if this evolution happens, and then the fertility rates rebound and most of the kids who are being born at that point are being born because their parents have this trait that they really want to be parents. They really want to have this family. And it's not, you know, as it has gone throughout history, it's not just, you know, you want to have kids because you need the help on the farm or force or fodder to throw against fortune's wheel because childhood mortality was so huge, 50% up until the year 1800, of course. If this comes to pass, then think about what that means. It means that kids are now chosen. They are the chosen ones. But seriously, it means they're wanted. That is a sea change. Full fathom five on that one, my friends. That is a sea change, a huge change in culture, in nothing less than civilization and humanity, right? To have, for the first time in history, most children being born desired, wanted as children, as parts of a parent-child relationship, as a legacy perhaps, but not as any of these other things, some accidental byproduct of sexual entertainment or who knows what other reasons you could have, right? We talked about them, farmhand, force, etc. So this is a terrifically important idea, right? That kids will be wanted, and the fertility rate might rebound because of these evolutionary pressures. And if that happens, there's going to be this really, really fundamental change where kids are desired as kids, as part of a family. All right, so those are the two big ideas. We're going to get to some data. Sorry, one little idea first. Let's just throw this out here and get rid of it. This means that in art, can we stop already with the movies like Children of Men and the second season of The Gift? Now, actually, I love the second season of The Gift for one thing, because it dunked so hard on Cuarón and Children of Men and things like that. But this idea that these zero population eliminating fertility horror movies have, that people are going to stop having babies, that's just not the case. If especially if this is true. But even, we're not asymptotically approaching zero kids. Even if this isn't true, the asymptote is not at zero. It's more like damping to some positive rate, not zero. Anyway, so I just want to toss it out there. And especially if this idea does come to pass, if this evolutionary force does win out, then, oh my gosh, then those movies will just look a little silly. And the books like Third and other books like that. All right. So now the data while you chew on big idea one, see if you can match the predictions from Collins and Page's models in terms of timing, in terms of population divergence from the current models. Big idea two, social effects from the fact that kids are wanted. All right, so now the data, right? Just to make sure that you are informed in your thought processes. Going to use Our World in Data's 2017 data because that's the best, really, best chart out there, most trustworthy. You got GDP per capita on the x-axis. That's the horizontal one, of course. Fertility rate, births per female on the y-axis, the vertical axis. So if you're new to this, right, then what this would mean is that the line goes down from the top left to the lower right. Right, as you go out in the rich scale on the horizontal axis, you go to the right, it means you're getting a more rich, a richer country. As you go over there, the data points drop on the y-axis, so it's a decreasing line from left to right. The y-axis, of course, represents fertility. So, where are countries right now? Well, in the top left, you have the Democratic Republic of the Congo, right? The Congo. This would be in the heart of the jungle part of Africa. Ugh, bothers me sometimes when people just equate Africa with the jungle. It's really just that relatively narrow, not super narrow, it's wide in absolute terms, but relatively narrow strip through the middle of Africa. Anyway, so Democratic Republic of Congo is at $760 purchasing power adjusted GDP per capita. And over six kids per woman at 6.02. And that's in the upper left part of the graph, right? You also have up there, not quite as far in the upper left as the Congo, but another country, a country in the Great Lakes region of Africa, Malawi, right? Where the Itokunga, the flycakes out on Lake Malawi, the endless lake where you have the African fish eagle, the voice of Africa crying, calling out its haunting song. Over the river, over the lake, excuse me, with those massive clouds of the flies and the fishermen out there just grease up their pan and wave their pan through the clouds of the flies and get the cakes of the flies on there. And then they pack them together and they eat them, right? The Kunga fly cakes of Lake Malawi. Fantastic culinary treat. So Malawi's at $1,000 again, PPP GDP, pay, purchasing power adjusted, and 4.3 kids per woman. So that's already down, it's already down a third in fertility from the Congo, and it's up almost half in purchasing power. So then you keep going down lower right. If you're wondering where the United States is, it's pretty far down in the lower right, but definitely not at the extreme. Pretty far down in the lower right, 55,000, 1.8 kids per woman. If you keep going to the right, you can get to Ireland, slightly bucking the trend, even though they're further to the right from the US, indicating higher GDP per capita. They're actually 0.1 higher in fertility, 1.9 children per female. So, you know, go Ireland. That's great. Love Ireland. Been there. Got palm trees in Ireland, technically cabbage palms, but really interesting. Did not expect to see the palm trees there. But that Gulf Stream be powerful. It be powerful, my friends. So anyway, the point is, it's not just an idea. It's a law that as wealth goes up, fertility goes down. A social law, at least so far. The biggest law-breaking countries, by the way, I guess maybe Israel and Nigeria. Israel and Nigeria, both big outliers, having more births than expected for their wealth levels. But still, nowhere near far enough, lying far enough outside the trend to make us doubt the trend at all. People have argued why this happens, right? And you know, it's not a physical law. When I say it's a law, it's not a physical law like equals gamma MC squared or, you know, Einstein's equivalence principle or something like that. And yes, I know they're still testing the equivalence principle all the time, but it never fails, does it? Never fails, at least not so far. So I don't mean a law like that. It's more of a law along the lines of Moore's law. So why does it happen? Of course, no one knows for sure. It's probably a combination of effects. But keep in mind, right, two of the big ones, probably child mortality, as I was saying earlier. And it's so important to remember, child mortality was 50% in the year 1800, right? Up to 50% in the year 1800. You had to have two kids to keep one of them alive, right? And so that's gonna have an effect on fertility, on number of children born. If you need kids, you need to have a lot of them to make sure that you get some of them with a 50% child mortality rate. You know, there's something to that. Also, increased urbanization is often given as an explanation for this. You don't need as many kids to help you in a city apartment as you do to help you on a farm. In fact, actually, you don't necessarily want a lot of kids packed into your city apartment. A lot of disadvantages there. You can't send them out to the yard like you can in the farm. Certainly not these days. Nobody lets the kids go out on the city streets these days. Shame for that. But, you know, there's another point that people don't often make, I don't see in this argument. People don't come out and say it enough, possible explanation for this trend, this social law, and that is just that we're decadent, right? We are so rich these days. Our lives are unbelievably luxurious compared to the lives of people just 100 years ago, even just 80 years ago, right? Started World War II. And the truth is, kids are a huge amount of work. They can be a pain. They can be a big pain. When I got married, you know, I got married. That didn't really change my life. Sorry, honey. But it didn't, right? You can still go out when you want. You can still do your old hobbies. You can still make love whenever you want. No changes. Then you have kids. That changes your life, my friends. That is a big change. Your life is somewhat not your own anymore, at least, you know, not all the time. Now you have responsibility. It takes away from your luxurious, decadent life. And there, you know, decadence, we are constantly marinating ourselves in this pool of art and artifice and technology that we've built to make our lives so awesome. But you can't say, Alexa, raise my kids. You know, that doesn't work. You need some good old-fashioned Danielson wax on, wax off, elbow wax or elbow grease. You have to hashtag put in work, son, to raise kids. And for a lot of people, the alternative is just much more enticing these days. The alternative of living in this Netflix, Xbox, constant, amazing, entertaining, cushy world, cushy lifestyle in this really fantastic, pain-free world, people just look at kids and they're like, yeah, they look kind of fun, but I'm a pass. You know, I'm a pass. I'm going to stay with what I got here. So all these things, I think, contribute, and the sybaritic lifestyle is an important part that doesn't get discussed enough. So what else is interesting here about the data? Well, another interesting thing about the data is that the zero population growth people in the 1970s, these guys who are panicking, they probably had no impact. Right, right. Do you remember Paul Ehrlich, his population bomb, that book? Ehrlich was such a fool. But this was really a great example of Western power, right? Or Western soft power, because it spread. This panic over population, it spread. It wasn't just limited to the West. In fact, Deng Xiaoping, right, bought into it, totally bought into it. He instituted the one-child policy in China, end of 1970s, 1980, I guess, really. And if you look at a graph of the Chinese birth rate, there is nothing. There's no visible effect, believe it or not, from the one-China policy coming into effect in 1980. In fact, there's a little bump upward in fertility rate in China after 1980. But mostly, it just continues the decay that had been ongoing. The only big change you see in fertility in China occurred during the Great Chinese Famine, during, you know, the very late 50s, early 60s. That was, of course, caused by, or at least in great part caused by, the disastrous, really almost catastrophic policies of the Great Leap Forward. When Mao was telling them to go out and bang their drums to chase the birds away from eating their seeds so that the plants could grow. Oh my gosh. Terrible. Terrible example of government hubris there. Killed millions. So that's one thing interesting about the data, is that it shows that this trend of lower fertility rate as wealth increases is inexorable. It really was not impacted. It was completely independent, at least in looking at the Chinese fertility rate. You really can't see any wiggle. If you see any wiggle in 1980, when the one child policy came into effect, that draconian policy, even that policy, if there's any wiggle at all in 1980, it's an upward wiggle. So yeah. Okay, now we've had enough chance to look at the data. Now we're going to go back and visit our big ideas. Hopefully you've had enough time to think about them. So to remind you, the first big idea is that tomorrow's kids will come with some constellation of traits that makes them more likely to reproduce themselves and to have big families themselves. And this will tend to cause the fertility rate to boom, to rise again after a long period of decline in the richest countries. So, what are we looking at here? What are some implications? Well, one of them, two big ones, but first let's get this first one out of the way. Policy implications, right? Most policy right now is predicated on the idea that our population will level off by the year 2100. We're going to hit about 11 billion in 2100. We're at about 7.8 or 8 billion now. And the thing is, if this selection pressure prevails, then that leveling off is not going to happen. And a lot of the policies, a lot of the arguments that people are making about what needs to happen over the next century, those need to be revisited and revised heavily, in fact. At least if this happens quickly, if this happens over the course of the next century. So how quickly will it happen? Well, think about it. We all remember from our biology textbooks, right? The gypsy pepper moth completely changed its colors just within a few decades after all the coal started being spewed out in Great Britain there. And Collins and Page, in their model from their 2017 paper, 2018 paper, their model actually has this effect coming into play with noticeable results almost immediately. Their population projections significantly differ from the United Nations model by 2050. North America and Europe, because of their current big slowdowns, they diverge much more from the UN projections than Asia by 2100. But the point is that by 2050, these are big effects. So this is an important idea. This is a big idea, and it needs to be considered, especially in policymakers, but otherwise too, especially by policymakers, because if you're planning for population leveling off and it's not going to level off, you've got some rethinking to do here. This is an important idea, and it's not getting talked about enough because these evolutionary pressures are very real. very real. Will they win out against all the other forces? Well, that's hard to say, but they at least deserve much more consideration than they are typically getting. So global minimum total fertility rate in Collins and Page's model hits a minimum around, when do you want to guess? The rate of change in total fertility rate goes from negative to positive when? Well, the answer is 2060. Right around 2060, you hit your minimum fertility rate under their model, and then it starts increasing again. And they put the probability of global population stabilization at only 5%. Of course, right now, most policies assume that that probability of global population stabilization is near 100%. Tremendous difference there. Needs consideration. Some other ideas that go along with it that follow from it. A, you need more investment in agriculture to feed these people. We need to keep investing in agriculture. We need to not count on the fact that more and more and more farmland will be turned over, as it has been over the last 100 years in developed nations, be turned back over into wilderness. So you can't count on that, and you do need to keep investing in agriculture. B, more and more power is needed. It's not okay. More and more energy use is needed. It is not okay to sentence all these new people that may be on the horizon, to sentence them to live in a powerless world, a dark world, right? North Korea at night, we all know how dark it looks there. It's not okay to make them live without power. So continued energy research is absolutely necessary there. C, environmental implications, right? You have to find pressing need, and people are addressing this from status points of view, but we need a lot more work from a non-status point of view on how to recognize property rights, how to move into at last a 21st century conception of environmental rights, so that our law can properly be punitive law rather than preventative law, and we can address environmental concerns through an individual rights approach. So those are your A, B, and C that we need right here. Fusion coming in to save the day, perhaps on a couple of those. That would be wonderful. That would be a great development if fusion finally got off the ground, fusion power. At the very least, though, you need to rely on traditional nuclear power, that is fission power. When you're above iron on the binding curve and you're breaking apart things, of course, we use uranium for that. By the way, if you looked at some of the latest polls, there's very good news on this front. Republican support for nuclear power has always been fairly high in the United States, over 50%. And now Democratic voters are starting to catch up just in the last 3 years. I'm not sure what has gone on, because, you know, I've been telling people this for decades, but if you've been listening to this podcast, there are a bunch of things that I've been telling people for decades, like old age is a disease and we need to work on that. People thought we're crazy 30 years ago. Finally, people are catching on that old age is indeed a disease and should be addressed as such, treated as such. Well, it seems the Democrats are finally catching on that nuclear fission power is actually almost certainly a net good, certainly as it produces no carbon emissions to speak of. It is probably the better alternative to fossil fuels, or at least needs to be investigated much more. And the new polls, Democratic support for nuclear power has gone from 37% traditional nuclear power. We're not talking pie in the sky fusion stuff here. 37% in 2018 to 55% now, possibly even a little over that. And that's amazing. That's great news. That is fantastic news. Hopefully all my friends that are nuclear engineers, maybe they can build new plants once this change in opinion carries through and starts affecting policy. Maybe my friends who are nuclear engineers can start building actual nuclear power plants that are producing energy instead of just cocooning all of the old plants. So as they say on the internet, this idea is huge if true. Now, though, there's another idea, another big idea, second big idea here that I really haven't seen discussed too much. I mentioned it before. Maybe Hansen has it in one of his blogs. I'm sure somebody has something. There's nothing new under the sun, Horatio. But here it is. The second idea is that for the first time in history, the majority of children born will be wanted as children and as additions to families. If, again, these evolutionary pressures that we're talking about, if they prevail, if they win out. So that's a big change, right? Kids, they're not just going to be seen as disposable. They're not going to be seen as something that just happened. They're not going to be seen as a necessary evil that accompanies sex. They're not going to be seen as something like that. They're going to be wanted. Almost impossible to imagine all the implications of that idea. But the first thing that will do is cut way, way down on child abuse, right? Child abuse, remember, is a hugely underrated or under-mentioned, under-addressed problem in the West right now. Probably the number one ignored social issue in the West right now, because anywhere from 10 to 20%, those are the best estimates, of people have suffered from it. The CDC, for what that's worth these days, pegs child abuse survivors at 14%, one in seven. And, you know, as horrific as child abuse is, it's terrible. As big a fraction as one in seven is, you hardly ever hear about it on the political trail, right? What candidates are building their platform against child abuse? Everybody's against child abuse, but you never hear about it on the trail, right? And yet you hear about child poverty. You hear about kids in poverty all the time. And that's basically the same fraction, one in seven. If you look in the United States, it's one in seven, maybe up to one in six. Basically the same fraction in the United States of children suffer from child poverty as from child abuse. And look, if you ask me, I'd rather be living poor than living with a predator. So how come you never hear about this on the campaign trail? You don't. You know, there's a lot of reasons. Could be because it's hard to differentiate yourself from the other candidate. Everybody's against them. Whereas child poverty, there are different ways to approach the problem that differentiate the candidates. And for child abuse, the approach tends to all be the same, at least so far. I don't know. But the good news is that if these selection effects are right and fertility rates rebound because kids are having kids that want to have kids and children are wanted, then you would expect the child abuse to drop, the child abuse rates to drop. And that's a fantastic thing. Another big implication of this second big idea that kids will be wanted is this will probably lead to more increased feminization of society. Now, we've seen that, right? Everything from our superheroes to our school classrooms has been completely feminized. I say completely because it's maybe not complete, but it's awfully close, right? Awfully close. So this will probably continue because the family having children, just obviously, that is going to fall more on the distaff side of the population than on the masculine side of the population. So there will be good effects and there will be bad effects from that feminization, probably. There certainly could be all good effects if it is approached properly, but that certainly hasn't been the case so far. I remind you that, for example, in my school, and this is representative of trends nationwide, in my school, over the last dozen years, only 18% of the school's valedictorians have been male. Somehow our schools are failing males. They have gone too far in the direction of feminization. Somehow. But you would expect that trend to be supported by the feminization trend to be supported by the increased emphasis on having children and having families. So that's not going anywhere. Not surprising, perhaps, given our world's recent history. That's going to wrap it up for today, guys. Those two big ideas, please consider them. Please share. You can have an impact. Just think about that. Democratic Party change in nuclear power. You have to think, I don't know, I guess you could hope that that's because people have been talking up nuclear power, talk about it for decades. Finally, it's starting to have some effect. So start talking about this. Maybe by 2050, when it starts to occur, people will be ready. If it starts to occur, people will be ready for the increase in fertility rates. If we talk about it, if we let people know, don't be afraid to speak up. Never be afraid. And never be afraid to subscribe. Find me on Twitter, ADK Homeroom, Reddit, ADK Homeroom. Feel free to slide into my DMs. Give me some feedback on the podcast. I look forward to hosting this podcast again tomorrow. Can't wait. It's going to be a Poetry Wednesday. Take care.